Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. So I have to start this show on a sad note. A friend of the show and a personal friend of mine, Hunter Lee, passed away. We're still trying to get details on what happened, but it's been requested that we do a moment of silence for him. And since I just learned about this maybe an hour ago, I don't really have a tribute set up for him yet. So we're going to take next week to do that. But I'm going to do a moment of silence for him starting now. Okay, so that moment of silence was for our dear friend Hunter Lee, who left us. And I'm not even, I feel so awful. I don't even know when he died. I don't know if it was today. I don't know if it was yesterday. He was a very, very dear friend, actually best friend to Ty. So maybe, and he certainly wasn't in any condition to let us know what was going on yet. So he will be missed. And with that, Elizabeth is here.
Hello, sweetie. That was really, really classy. I was like, oh, my God, what is she doing? Because I was late. But yes, absolutely. A moment of silence. He was such a wonderful old soul. I loved him so much. An amazing old soul. And I think he's left a little legacy for all of us to remember him by. I really want to find, and I don't think it's still around because he got so many different accounts, but his first live video that I saw that he did, I fell in love with him. I was like, I connected because he had such depth and ancient energy. Yeah. That was fantastic.
He did a podcast called Orchids in the Alley, and he said it's kind of like in the attic, but with no pedophilia. He's just so funny. Like, I don't know. He was so funny, and he's definitely going to be missed. Mom's with us.
Hey, Carla. It's not a happy day.
I had myself muted as well. So this was a kind young man, respectful, smart, funny, and he will be missed. And I'm glad that I got to know him for the brief time that I got to. So I'm prayers up family. And it is a little uncomfortable because we, don't know how to pray, who to pray for. Like, I don't think about his folks, so maybe we can get all that information before and do a little something next week. I think that would be appropriate.
Absolutely. And I think that it's important, especially on a day like today, remembering 9/11, I think it's very important to find out why and not stop until we find out why, so we make sure that this never happens again.
I agree.
Amen. Amen to that. Amen to that. I would love to forego our little conversation next week if we can find his show, because he was on the show before I was. I think it might have been my very first time of calling in, and I have to kick myself because, you know, how I love to talk over everybody because I know everything. That was probably one of his best. He has such style, such grace, such intelligence, and such politeness that
and so eloquent.
Was amazing. He was eloquent,
articulate.
And I'm just like, kick myself for even opening my mouth while he was speaking at all. But I'd love if we could find that and play that next week. Because I think the world needs to remember.
And of course,
how
we can take breaks throughout the show if anybody wants to call in. Call in number is 319-527-6208. And then press 1 if you want to be a part of the show and let share a memory of Hunter. But I would like to start with our topics for today. We have a packed show. And for the first hour, we're going to talk about 9/11. And the second hour, we're going to talk about Pedogate and the Queen's passing, because they are related. And then the third hour is going to be, we're going to have a guest on. Charity Anderson's going to be talking about her friend Susie, who is being wrongfully incarcerated, right? For pointing out, for telling people that her daughter was being molested by her boyfriend. So,
That's a story that needs to be told. That's terrible.
Father and boyfriend. Go ahead.
You did say that there was an open line for people who are still believe the original story of 9/11. Mm-hmm. So if there's anybody listening and they want to call in, Danielle, could you repeat that number to call in so that people can catch that again?
Sure. It's 319-527-6208 and then press 1.
Okay. So take it away, Danielle. I'm going to be listening because I still am one of those people that believe that planes knocked down the building. There's a lot that I don't believe about the original story anymore, just because of I know that you have a ton of researched information, and I'm going to be willing to listen to it today. Having said that,
before we
get
this is
9/11 happened and 3,000 people died, and I don't want to take this subject lightly. Not that I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that. That event changed my life forever. So gently, daughter. Take it away, baby.
Well, you might not like the first clip I've got then.
Everyone's like. Yeah.
Of course. Okay. All right. I'm just going to hold my breath and grit my teeth. And you know, again, I have definitely moved in the other direction other than still all those people died. And our country as a whole, you're right, Elizabeth, it changed everyone's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And something's good. So anyway, I'm going to put myself.
I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to predict that the only point of contention we'll have is, and maybe like right now, do we have the same common ground as that? The people behind this event had malicious intent and that the story they gave us was not correct.
I have begun to believe that.
Okay, good.
I still don't know who it is, although we have some ideas, and I'm sure Danielle's going to pop those out for us. And kick it around after we listen to the clip.
Okay. And I think that's really like the main point would be that in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to listen to these. I don't think I've heard any of these before. So this will be a good show.
So with that, I'll give you the official 9/11 story in 5 minutes. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
On the morning of September 11, 2001, 19 men armed with box cutters directed by a man on dialysis in a cave fortress halfway around the world using a satellite phone and a laptop directed the most sophisticated penetration of the most heavily defended airspace in the world, overpowering the passengers and the military combat-trained pilots on four commercial aircraft before flying those planes wildly off course for over an hour without being molested by a single fighter interceptor. These 19 hijackers, devout religious fundamentalists who like to drink alcohol, snort cocaine, and live with pink-haired strippers, managed to knock down three buildings with two planes in New York. While in Washington, a pilot who couldn't handle a single-engine Cessna was able to fly a 757 in an 8,000-foot descending 270-degree corkscrew turn to come exactly level with the ground, hitting the Pentagon in the budget analyst office where DOD staffers were working on the mystery of the $2.3 trillion that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had announced missing from the Pentagon's coffers in a press conference the day before, on September 10, 2001. Luckily, the news anchors knew who did it within minutes.
Osama bin Laden.
The pundits knew within hours.
Osama bin Laden.
The administration knew within the day.
Terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them.
And the evidence literally fell into the FBI's lap.
That a hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
But for some reason, a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists demanded an investigation into the greatest attack on American soil in history. That investigation was delayed, underfunded, set up to fail, a conflict of interest, and a cover-up from start to finish. It was based on testimony extracted through torture, the records of which were destroyed. It failed to mention the existence of WTC-7, Able Danger, PTEC, Sibel Edmonds, OBL and the CIA, and the drills of hijacked aircraft being flown into buildings that were being simulated at the precise same time that those events were actually happening. It was lied to by the Pentagon, the CIA, the Bush administration, and as for Bush and Cheney, well, no one knows what they told it because they testified in secret, off the record, not under oath, and behind closed doors. It didn't bother to look at who funded the attacks because that question is ultimately of little practical significance. Still, the 9/11 Commission did brilliantly, answering all of the questions the public had, except most of the victims' family members' questions, and pinned blame on all the people responsible, although no one so much as lost their job, determining the attacks were
failure of imagination.
Because
nobody in our government, at least, and I don't think the prior government that could envision flying airplanes into buildings.
Except the Pentagon, FEMA, NORAD, and the NRO. The DIA destroyed 2.5 terabytes of data on Able Danger, but that's okay because it probably wasn't important. The SEC destroyed their records on the investigation into the insider trading before the attacks, but that's okay because destroying the records of the largest investigation in SEC history is just part of routine record keeping. NIST has classified the data that they used for their model of WTC-7's collapse, but that's okay because knowing how they made their model of the collapse would jeopardize public safety. The FBI has argued that all material related to their investigation of 9/11 should be kept secret from the public, but that's okay because the FBI probably has nothing to hide. This man never existed, nor is anything he had to say worthy of your attention, and if you say otherwise, you are a paranoid conspiracy theorist and deserve to be shunned by all of humanity. Likewise him, 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 and her, and her, and her, and him. Osama bin Laden lived in a cave fortress in the hills of Afghanistan, but somehow got away. Then he was hiding out in Tora Bora, but somehow got away. Then he lived in Abbottabad for years, taunting the most comprehensive intelligence dragnet employing the most sophisticated technology in the history of the world for a decade, releasing video after video with complete impunity and getting younger and younger as he did so, before finally being found in a daring SEAL team raid which wasn't recorded on video, in which he didn't resist or use his wife as a human shield, and in which these crack special forces operatives panicked and killed this unarmed man, supposedly the best source of intelligence about those dastardly terrorists on the entire planet. Then they dumped his body in the ocean before telling anyone about it. Then a couple dozen of that team's members died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. This is the story of 9/11, brought to you by the media which told you the hard truths about
his head could be seen to move violently forward.
And
they took the babies out of the incubators.
And
mobile production facilities.
And
the rescue of Jessica Lynch.
If you have any questions about this story, you are a batshit, paranoid, tinfoil, dog-abusing baby hater and will be reviled by everyone. If you love your country and or freedom, happiness, rainbows, rock and roll, puppy dogs, apple pie, and your grandma, you will never ever express doubts about any part of this story to anyone. Ever. This has been a public service announcement by the friends of the FBI, CIA, NSA, DIA, SEC, MSM, White House, NIST, and the 9/11 Commission. Because ignorance is strength.
Okay. So, did you guys get that? Are we all on the same page?
I loved it. loved it. Wow. And I can't wait for the next one to come out about the last 3 years we've gone through. That was so good.
Yeah,
oh my
he did.
God.
He also did one on Watergate. That was fun. But, so, Mom, what do you think?
He did?
Holy crap.
It's hard having your whole belief system shaken to the core, you know?
I've been sad and angry ever since it happened. Now I'm more sad and angry.
Yeah.
See, and you know
so
what? I'm sure all of that stuff flew right past my head at the time. And all I wanted to do was get revenge.
It's very hard to look at this information. And that actually leads me to my next video, which is about cognitive dissonance surrounding 9/11. And it's a group of psychologists talking about cognitive dissonance and their own cognitive dissonance surrounding 9/11.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, this is a little bit longer, 10 minutes.
Okay, hold on.
Go ahead.
Before you play that video, I want to precursor it. So you guys know what I do for a living, right? I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, and I focus on trauma when I do my counseling because it's about 65% trauma rate for people who suffer from substance use disorder. And one of the groups that I've done over the years, I asked people, where were you on 9/11? And it's only just a bit in the last year or so because of the kids, the young people, they can tell you where they were, who they talked to, what they did that day, what they were wearing, what it felt like over the next 5 days. This is important, too, in relation to the cognitive dissonance. Because remember, the inference was is that we were going to be attacked again, and we were holding our breath. Everyone in the United States has some level of PTSD from 9/11. If you can have a flashback of a date, that means it was a powerful event in your emotional health life. It's a powerful group. I mean, as you sit around the group, and everybody can remember. And they talk about who they talked to, what they said, how they felt, watching TV all day. Little kids, interestingly enough, the teachers in the schools turned on the television for little kids and had them watch it all day until their folks picked them up.
Yeah.
So these were school-aged
that is so wrong. And that was exactly what they wanted, was mass traumatization. We'll talk about that.
Trauma-based mind control.
Yeah, exactly. No, seriously. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I just wanted to prep for that. And so I got to tell you, this one's kicking my ass now. I'm sad. Okay, I'm going to mute myself. Go ahead and play your next video.
Okay, here we go. And you'll run into these kind of people out there that they just can't do it. They cannot see any other information besides what's been programmed into them. But okay, here we go.
Okay, well, how many fights have you and I had over the years, Danielle, where I'm like, nope, stop, don't talk to me about that. Do you remember?
Yeah, exactly. And I think of you every time I watch this video or listen to this video, every time, you and a bunch of other people.
All right.
This trauma-based mind control was powerful. It was precise. It was, you know, we watched the predictive programming for decades. But here we go. Let's watch. This is about 11 minutes. 3, 2, 1.
Most of us who have lived with the events of 9/11 have, as a result, experienced some kind of trauma. It can be very difficult to come to terms with what actually happened at the World Trade Center. In fact, someone told me recently, "I wouldn't believe what you're telling me even if it were true." Our petition signers, with psychological expertise, have stepped forward to offer their insight. While this segment is clearly outside the knowledge base of the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, these experts in psychology highlight their valuable experience for us as to why this evidence can still be so difficult for people to accept.
As we know, the horrors of what happened on 9/11 were televised all over the world, and they were televised, in fact, live. We witnessed the deaths of almost 3,000 of our fellow Americans. We know this had a very severe and traumatic impact on a majority of the population. At this point, we have 9 years of hard scientific evidence that disproves the government theory about what happened on September 11th, and yet people continue to be either oblivious to the fact that this information exists or completely resistant to looking at this information. So the question becomes, why? Why is it that people have so much trouble hearing this information? From my work, I think we would be remiss not to look at the impact of trauma.
Many people respond to these truths in a very deep way. Some have a visceral reaction like they've been punched in the stomach. To begin to accept the possibility that the government was involved is like opening Pandora's box. If you open the lid and peek in a little bit, it's going to challenge some of your fundamental beliefs about the world.
If we can think of our worldview as being sort of our mental and emotional home, I think all of us will do just about anything to defend our homes, to defend our families. And so I see that with people, and I saw that with myself when my brother tried to talk with me about it, of don't mess with me, don't mess with my home, don't mess with my comfort with how things are. About a week later, I read a lengthy article by Professor Griffin about why he believes the official account of 9/11 cannot be true. And it was a very well-researched article. It was in my office at the time. I sat there and I felt my stomach churning. I thought maybe I was going to be sick. And I leaped out of my chair and ran out the door and took a long walk around the block, around several blocks, and just broke down. I understand now that what was happening was my worldview about my government being in some way my protector, almost like a parent, had been dashed, and it was like being cast out into the wilderness, I think is the closest way to describe that feeling. And I sobbed and I sobbed, felt like the ground had completely disappeared beneath my feet, and I knew at some point during the walk that I knew that I was going to have to become active in educating other people about this, that for me to retain any sense of integrity, I was going to have to take some action. I couldn't just let something like this go.
When we hear information that contradicts our worldview, social psychologists call the resulting insecurity cognitive dissonance. For example, with 9/11, we have one cognition, which is what the official story of 9/11, what our government told us, what our media repeated to us over and over, that 19 Muslims attacked us. On the other hand, we have what scientists, researchers, architects, engineers are now beginning to tell us, which is that there is evidence that shows that the official story cannot be true. So now we've lost our sense of security. We are starting to feel vulnerable. Now we're confused.
9/11 Truth challenges the beliefs that our country protects us and keeps us safe, and that America is the good guy. When your beliefs are challenged, fear and anxiety are created. In response to that, our psychological defenses kick in, and they protect us from these emotions. Denial, which is probably the most primitive psychological defense, is the one most likely to kick in when our beliefs are challenged.
And it's a very, very uncomfortable state to be in. And eventually, our mind shuts off. Just like when a computer is overloaded, Our minds get overloaded. We can't handle it anymore, and we shut down.
And what some of us will tend to do is deny the evidence that's coming our way and stick to the original story, the official story, and to try to regain our equilibrium in that way. Another thing we can do is decide to look at the conflicting evidence and be sincere and be open-minded and look at both sides of the issue and then make up our own mind about what reality is. Here are a few of those spontaneous initial reactions to hearing the contradictory evidence about 9/11.
I don't want to know the truth, or I'd become too negative and psychologically go downhill. I'm not sure I want to know. If this is true, then up would be down and down would be up. My life would never be the same.
They say, this is the way the world works, and I'm convinced this is the right way the world works. 9/11 doesn't fit into that paradigm, so I don't need to look at the evidence.
Fran, I refuse to believe that many Americans could be that satanically treasonous. Someone would have talked. But these are beliefs. They are not scientific facts. But these beliefs do keep us from looking at the empirical evidence. Whenever we say, I refuse to believe, we can be sure that the evidence that's coming our way is not bearable and that it's conflicting with our worldview much too much. As I thought about all of these responses, I realized that what is common to every one of them is the emotion of fear. People are afraid of being ostracized. They're afraid of being alienated. They're afraid of being shunned. They're afraid of their lives being inconvenienced. They'd have to change their lives. They're afraid of being confused. They're afraid of psychological deterioration. They're afraid of feeling helpless and vulnerable. And they're afraid that they won't be able to handle the feelings that are coming up. None of us want to feel helpless and vulnerable.
Healing comes through facing the truth, experiencing it, allowing the feelings to come in, so that if there are feelings of fear that perhaps these events were caused by something that we haven't thought about yet, dark elements within our society, for example, we'll let that come in and explore it. Let the light shine on whatever happened. This will be the most healing process. The Germans did this after their war. The South Africans did this after apartheid. Reconciliation through the truth is what is a deep path to psychological recovery from the myths and lies around which this historic event has been cloaked in the official view.
One of the ways to deal with the trauma is to find the answers. That's why I think it is of such importance to have a comprehensive investigation.
To work together to expose what happened, regardless of where the evidence takes us. That's what we expect in our state government, law enforcement. I think that by putting science together with the law, we will have a psychological healing around the impossible cognition that has been produced on that day.
After World War II, part of the way that Jewish people honored the dead was by making sure that the truth was known and that the value of these people was respected. Not pursuing the truth about 9/11 disrespects the value of the life of the people that died. Thinking that we're above such things, that it could happen in other countries, but it couldn't happen here, that's a lack of humility, and that's excessive pride. And so not being able to see our dark side or our weaknesses is the most dangerous thing.
A feature of American history that makes us particularly liable to this pride is this notion that's called exceptionalism, that America is the exceptional nation. And that began from the beginning as this country was formed. The people would say, well, there was so much evil in the European country, so much cheating, so much lying, so much using the people for the ruler's purposes, but not in America. We have leaders that are free from those sins. So I think this has made 9/11 particularly difficult for Americans.
So we need to understand that questioning is patriotic. Questioning is what we're supposed to do as citizens. That's our duty.
One thing that has become important for me personally is to educate myself, is to take responsibility. There's that wonderful quote from Mahatma Gandhi where he said that we must be the change that we wish to see in the world.
When we come to the national level, when something like 9/11 happens, we need to be sure that we have a real investigation into who the perpetrators are, and then we need to be sure that those perpetrators are held legally accountable. It's part of the healing process on the individual level as on the collective level. We need the truth in order to heal.
Okay, thoughts?
So one of my chief arguments with you over the years has been, if in fact it was a plot, why hasn't anyone come forward? How have they managed to keep it a secret all these years? And isn't it interesting, while that
okay, I'm sorry.
Video on Fox News, they just reported, where did it go? Just reported that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other three that are in Guantanamo Bay are preparing to accept a plea deal. They're going to plead guilty in exchange for their lives.
Interesting. Now, can I ask you something? Is my whole family is the very same way you are. They take everything as the God's honest truth if it comes from whatever news station that they want to watch, or they never question that perhaps people are lying, that perhaps we're being fooled. And as far as no one came forward, they don't ever want you to know that anything different than what they've told you has happened.
And I'm not necessarily
the powers. The powers that did this, they want you to not even think that they exist. They want you to continue to believe in the two-party system, in the
created it. I understand the people that perpetrated it would not come forward. But in order to pull something like that off, it would have taken 10 people, 20 people, 30 people, 40 people. Are you telling me at some point that they wouldn't, somebody wouldn't bust
the push to the button? Do you know how compartmentalized our military is and our bureaucracy and our government is? It's compartmentalized.
And do you know who Seville Edmund is?
And it was a weaponized push the button.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Danielle.
You know who
I don't know.
She was a State Department official and blew the whistle on this. She wrote a book called Classified Woman. She is the most classified woman in the world, really. When she actually went to court over something, her name was redacted because she blew off, among others, a lot of other things, a lot of pedogate, a lot of internal pedogate stuff. And they just, instead of just running the risk of getting out, they just classified her, completely classified her, could not tell her name, could not tell her story, could not counsel, they have ways of arc-inciting anybody who's going to come out with this stuff. Like, the how they got away with 9/11 is precisely how they've gotten away with Pedogate. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Danielle. And here's the thing. Again, over the years, see that 9/11 was very likely an inside job. Okay, keeping in mind that I start from the 3,000 people. That's where my head, my heart, my and those psychologists explained it beautifully why I feel the way that I do. The woman talking about going outside and sobbing, that's the way I feel. But what convinced me of the possibility of 9/11 being an inside job was COVID, because they did it again. And I never would be having this conversation, believing this insanity, this wickedness, this evil 2020 election. I watched them do it myself. And keep in mind also when 9/11 happened, I was still very early in recovery. And when it happened, just like most of the United States, and so I said something about some good came out of 9/11, and it was 9/12. Just like most of the nation, we sat in front of our TVs and sobbed and cried and mourned and wept. And then we got pissed. And so, yes, we may have swallowed their story, hook, line, and sinker, and we wanted to make someone pay because no one has ever done that on American soil before. It created millions.
Oh,
I
hate that.
I'm sorry. Did I go on a soapbox? I apologize. That was
No. This is the first time it's been done to this scale. That's right. Until COVID. And then they did it. It was worse with COVID because it was a perpetual, you know, stay in isolation.
They're still killing
stay inside.
People.
Yeah.
Well,
9/11, hold on, 9/11 was actually unified Americans in a strange way, where COVID divided people in a strange way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So they had to change. You know, they had to change what they did this time.
Yes.
Evil, wicked, dirty, filthy bastards.
On both of those instances, the only thing that bothered me was people's reaction to this. I watched the same thing. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, watching that plane go through that building. It's all they played. And I'm like, wow, because I don't go to the movies. I was like, this is too cool. I'm so sorry. And then everybody started to question. Planes can't do that. That's not real. They stopped playing that on the TV. And then everybody started acting like these crazy, hateful people. And that's what scared me, because none of that affected me. But being around people like that, watching people turn into these spiteful, got to go kill these people, and this patriotism. I don't like that patriotism. That type of patriotism scared the shit out of me. And we got the same thing going on now. We've got, it's almost like Nazi-like focus into we must. And I'm like, wow. And it's people's reaction to these type of psychological operations is what scares me. And
yeah.
So at no point in time, 20-some years, you believed all this. Never, not once did anything like not make any sense. I find that I'm blown away by that more than anything. But
it took me a long time. I was a Democrat, and so I knew Bush had done something wrong, and so there.
Uh-oh, you're cutting out, Danielle.
This was an inside job, and I wanted to watch the evidence if it came out. But for years, you know, it was nothing of research, but more of I'm going to watch news clips over and over on 9/11 and be sad. I ran a dental office, my first dental office, actually, in 2001. I was on my second dental office when it happened, and I was, you know, I just remember, like, even up to a year later, people were like, ooh, I don't think I can schedule a dental appointment on such, it just sounds wrong. And then people, all of this is long-winded, but what I'm saying is that first we were not really allowed to do anything but mourn. We weren't really allowed to ask questions. We just, I could be anti-war and I could think that maybe there was something there, but I couldn't really ask those questions because people were so raw. Just raw about this incident.
Really?
That was one of the biggest trauma-based mind control, operations since really JFK,
yeah.
To be honest, because that was the last time everybody remembered where they were and what they were doing when it happened.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
These are trauma-based mind control events that actually should. Sorry, I've taken up too much time.
They came to you from the same guys. The same guys brought you there. You know, it's funny. Right after that happened, Ed Asner was one of the first ones to push the investigation into the story doesn't make sense. Something else is happening here. And they call it that the truther movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that got poo-pooed. But the more it got poo-pooed, the more traction it got, and the more people started to question.
Yeah.
I remember...
And it's really
here's the Patriots who are like, oh no, we got to keep this war going. We need to go to every country and kill them all. And as he came out and more scientists,
the
engineers came out, they said, they started to demonize and talk about Ed Asner. Oh, he was a communist, just like all the rest of them. And I'm like, what? And that was coming from the people who listened to Fox. And it's like they desperately, at any cost, needed to keep their bubble of reality around themselves. They couldn't function without it. It was unreal.
Mm-hmm.
I remember.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
And you see the same thing going on now.
Exactly. And so we have to really see these things for what they are. And a lot of people still think that it's just not okay to question it. Especially on 9/11, we should be thinking about the victims. And I have to say that I 100% I'm thinking of the victims every single time I ask a question. And people who just, don't ask questions and just be sad and know that America got attacked and never question anything, those are the people that are disrespecting the victims. Because you know what? If I died in one of these things, one of these big mass, a parent of a child who died in a school shooting, I would say the best way to remember my family, remember these victims, is to never stop asking questions until you get to the truth.
Yes.
Now, what we do know is the official story is a bunch of hooey. I just gave it to you 5 minutes or less, James Corbett.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing true about the official story. Nothing. So what happened? That's when once the reality that these people have been living and believing, then they have to figure out what did happen. Because I mean, honestly, like we know that two planes hitting two buildings, it did not take down three buildings, right? These are steel buildings. Show you or listen from, I think it was 1945 when a bomber hit the Empire State Building and they made a hole. It did
and
not collapse three buildings. It
you
did
know,
not collapse three buildings.
All the people that were there, they all were talking explosions, controlled demolition, bombs.
How do you explain the text messages from family members on the plane that went down in Pennsylvania? Okay. How do you explain that? Go ahead.
Here. Can you explain all the Trump supporters that went in and demolished the Capitol all the undercover FBI agents, I should say, that were dressed as Trump supporters.
This was a show. I asked a question.
Okay.
If all of it could be, how do you explain those text messages?
Okay, can I answer?
I'd love for you to.
Okay. Can't even text pictures out of my bedroom right now because I have a faulty signal because I'm right under the flight path. You can't send pictures now or text messages now in an airplane. You can't. How did they do it in 2001? If they were in the air like they said they were, how do you do that in 2001? What technology in 2001 would have allowed for that to happen? I think the planes were on the ground. I think something hit the towers. I don't know if they were those planes. Because there's even evidence that those planes were still in commission after, as part of the flight OGS or whatever, after 2001, those planes were still flying. Or at
least
planes
were they?
One of them. This is 20 years and I should be more up on it, but I can definitely find it for you. I've definitely seen it. And there was an interview. I wish I had it in a shorter form because, like when I do chores or anything around the house or whatever, I have audio going on in the background. And so I listen to a lot of these things while I'm just going. And because of that, I can do these long formats. And there was an interview with an American Airlines and she quit her job because of this. She just happened to not be – she could have been on that plane because that was in her path, knew that Patty Ong or Betty Ong or whatever her name was, flight attendant. What she thinks is going on is that they remote took over those planes, the military, because they were doing military games that day. They landed the planes. And this is from a flight attendant. It's her theory. She did a book. I can references for these at the end. But I did find it recently and posted it recently. But it's a flight attendant who believes that the planes were remotely taken over by hijackers, or not by hijackers, by the United States government, by remoting in and landing them. That was the technology that they were using, is remoting into a plane and landing it. Right? So they did that with these passengers, and those texts were sent from the ground.
Todd Beamer died, Danielle. His family says he died.
He did, and it's very sad.
Yeah.
But he didn't die in a plane crash.
Well, okay. So you guys are saying
and
every single thing of 11 is not true. I would not hesitate to believe that the planes were taken over mechanically, but those people died. Okay, so
they did die,
and it's
very sad. And their deaths need to be mourned today as well. They did die. They just did not die wrestling a plane to the ground or flying into buildings. The passengers died, according to this flight attendant and her theory, which makes a lot of on the ground. And her theory is that they just closed up the hatch and gassed them. But that would support the theory that the planes were still in use afterwards.
Well.
I know, but that's that kind of day.
That kind of day. And so you'll have to show me that because, the people in Pennsylvania, there's a crash.
The preacher, the town preacher everyone loves. And he's he rapes his little girl. And nobody will ever
know.
This is just like the pillar of the community is diddling his little girl, and nobody could ever. Oh, how could he ever do that? Even the mother couldn't.
Yeah, look at him.
This is happening, and the denial.
Exactly, he's a very upstanding citizen.
This is exactly what's going on. Because how could our authority figures? It's like you can't wrap your head around it, so you choose to not believe it and question and all
okay.
these. But it's almost like just sit down and watch. Well, what this man does around this little girl. Watch what the government does in its daily life. And just sit back and see.
Absolutely.
I mean, honestly.
Stop. Stop. You're talking to someone who would believe anything about its government now, which is very sad. Okay. I just don't know. I don't have proof that the plane didn't crash in Pennsylvania. Now the Pentagon, that one is the one that actually got me started thinking there's a problem with this story because
the Pentagon was fake. Yeah.
Okay. There's still questions. Y'all haven't proven beyond a shadow of a doubt just by hollering at me that those didn't crash into those buildings and that the one in Shanksville didn't crash. Okay, just because some airline pilot or stewardess says, well, this is how it maybe happened. You have to have more evidence than that. The truth is that I do believe that our government was likely responsible for it. And that makes me really sad. But just because that potential is true doesn't mean that those planes didn't crash with humans in them. Danielle, you stretch that a little bit for me.
I don't know. I don't know about that so much, but I do know that the visuals is what worked for them. The smoke coming out of the Pentagon, not so much that how it was hit by and what it was hit by, the fact that we were attacked, the Pentagon was attacked, that was quite an optic, and that was the one that hit me. And then you find out years later that the part of the Pentagon that got destroyed was the part of the Pentagon where all the papers and all the accounting department and everything that would have been used in a congressional investigation into stolen money into a black ops budget.
Yes.
Because the day before, they were called on trillions and trillions. And that was too ironical for me. It was like, interesting. They blew up three buildings.
I didn't remember that at all.
Took the insurance money off of them, stole the gold that was in one of them, and then cleared the slates of the lost Pentagon money and then got to go to war and spend more money. And it's like, look at how interesting this little game is. When you're really specific, how could you be sad? You should be outraged.
Elizabeth.
Outraged.
So that part of the story, Elizabeth, is more and more and more credible that it was a quote-unquote inside job. But you can't make all of it fit, okay? Okay, hold on. One second. You have one more video that's 54 seconds, and this is on September 10th. It's Rumsfeld. I want you guys to listen to it because this it says the whole world forgot about this the very next day.
Yep.
Failed to adapt.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they can fail and die is what provides the incentive to survive. But governments can't die. So we need to find other incentives for bureaucracy to adapt and improve. The technology revolution has transformed organizations across the private sector. But not ours, not fully, not yet. We are, as they say, tangled in our anchor chain. Our financial systems are decades old. According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions. We cannot share information from floor to floor in this building because it's stored on dozens of different technological systems that are inaccessible or incompatible.
And wouldn't you know that archaic antiquated system he was just explaining, was hit by a plane the very next day. And nobody heard a thing
right.
about it after that. It was just gone, poof, like it never happened.
That's
over
where
$2 trillion.
That's where I started
yes.
to doubt the original story with
this,
the Pentagon plane. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. You know what? And many people still don't. Here, my sister just posted this wonderful picture of the firefighters hoisting the flag up in the rubble and remembering 9/11. It's just, yeah. You know, it's like she now just is starting to, and she's going to hate me because she never listens to the show.
Okay. So just as a public service.
Is saying that George Bush might not be everything she thought he was.
Okay.
Some people never wrap their head around this. She thinks I'm crazy.
Hold on.
She thinks I'm a crazy asshole.
Can you stop for a second?
Sure.
Because that picture still means something to me. And if you want to convince people or try to guide them through this process, don't discount those feelings. Every time I see that picture, I still get a catch in my throat, and I still repost it every time. It means
yeah.
something to me.
It does to me, too. Do you know that so when we're talking about the Twin Towers, I think it's something like 210 stories combined, right, of floors.
Yeah.
210
yeah.
stories. And there's this story of these firefighters that were, and they went on to do several interviews because they were on basically on the ground floor and were in, I guess, the elevator shaft, but survived the fall, the collapse. They were in the building, and there was like three of them that like Ladder 9, they did a movie about it. And they've done many, many interviews after the fact. And it's,
yes.
It's very interesting. They all describe something that was completely impossible because we're talking about the amount of rubble that's 210 stories and the next day being able to see sunlight. How is that possible?
And
where did the tower go?
It's not possible, Danielle. And you're absolutely correct because the rest of the people were vaporized.
Mm-hmm.
So things
that should
right.
have been vaporized were not, and things that were not vaporized should have been. Like, for instance, one of the things that, you know, and this is kind of like an exercise, but like close your eyes and picture the image in your head of that day and the aftermath and the cleanups, especially the day of. And is there, you know, something there in that image that seems kind of odd to you that stood out in your mind?
The doggies.
What was that you broke up?
The dogs. The search and rescue
dogs. Oh, the dogs.
They couldn't find anyone, and they were sad.
Yeah.
So... And that, I remember that bothering me, that they couldn't find any bodies at all. And I'm like, there's got to be
except for this fire crew.
Right? Yes, except for this fire crew. So why couldn't the doggies find anybody? Your stepfather, Danielle, you know how he was about German Shepherds, and he kept trying to drag me away from the television, but I wouldn't go. And I sat and wept when the search and rescue people they had to bury people under some rubble and let the doggies find someone because they're
I remember that.
Okay.
Wow,
so
that's dark, bro.
Yeah, it's very dark. So I remember thinking at the time how bizarre that was, that they couldn't find not even – you know, a piece of a body for these dogs couldn't find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there
Elizabeth,
are
Elizabeth, you want to go next? I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I can go next if you can't if you don't have something, but if you want to go next, go ahead.
Well, I don't mean to jump all over Carla. Not intentionally.
No. But you, like, you're in
I wanted to just sit back and listen for a minute. And as you were talking, I remember was the visual, which was just unbelievable. I was like, how did they not all die? Was, do you remember the ash, the white ash everywhere? Then the people that were in the streets, and this, you know, Giuliani was the mayor then. And it was just like, where did all of this come from? And they kept on saying, oh, from the fluorescent light bulbs is what they kept saying. And it's like, no, it didn't make any sense. It was like concrete dust. It was just like, unbelievable, the amount of ash, just like a volcano had exploded of ash, but white ash, because it was from the fluorescent. Oh, and they kept saying, you don't know how many light bulbs were in that building. Just look up. And that didn't make sense to me. I was like, you're crazy. And nobody wanted to talk about the forensics. And really nobody ever wanted to talk about why they needed to get rid of the forensics so fast. But that's when people started really questioning, was when they need, but there was no investigation. There was just the reaction was, we're going to war, and rah, rah, rah. They got everybody to focus upon that, what they did to us, and without questioning what happened here. And that's my big memory was that, and how it didn't make sense, and neither did people's reaction make sense either to me. Anyways. On that.
So let's go back there. And so now that, you know, both of you are saying these things, yes, I see both of them for sure. The doggies, that's sad. Mine, close your eyes, is the paper. Everywhere. There was paper everywhere, flying everywhere. Like we were told it was from filing cabinets or something.
Mm-hmm.
But paper, just everywhere. Next to places where, you know, the news coverage was saying that, you know, if you're going to send in charity supplies for need of steel-toed boots because the workers are down in there and their boots are melting, right? So we know.
Why would there be paper?
Steel. If it's hot enough to melt steel-toed boots, why is there paper anywhere?
I'll tell you why. Because their cover story immediately was, oh, they found a passport. I think that was designed. It was like confetti after the fact. If they can have a direct energy weapon, zoom, boom, on that, because that wasn't even controlled demolition. Because you watch all the hotels that go down, that they've done that like that, and it didn't look like that. They just went down like Building 7, but the clouds of dust, that was a direct energy weapon. And then
they look like
course,
inverted mushroom clouds.
It was like, here's the sadistic part. The satanic element is, it was almost like here, like a parade. Like Rip Torn comes through with all these papers from an airplane that you didn't see, perhaps, to add to the story. You know what I'm saying? Let me offer a theory,
and then we're going to have to get on to the next subject, even though I could go on forever on this subject. What is a directed energy weapon? We keep talking about this. It's either controlled demolition or a directed energy weapon, because we know that two planes can't take down three steel buildings. Just doesn't make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a directed energy weapon is like, this is the... And the most basic way to describe it is it's a combination of energy sources, magnetic and microwave. It's a combination of these two things that can actually, when you put them together, can do things like levitate objects. And this is why, and I'm just going to shortly go off tangent, but this is where species with amnesia, because putting these energy is something that is being, I believe, is being weapons tested right in front of our eyes. But we, as even our government, is only now understanding this kind of technology. When I believe that, you know, these great wonders of the world, like the pyramids, right, where we don't know how they were able to elevate these rocks with the technology that they had at the time. Well, I think that we live in the dark ages. And I think there was technology here a long time ago that we're just now remembering. And,
right.
And I think that 9/11 was a demonstration of a directed energy weapon. And so, like, to Mom's point of, you know, that people were vaporized and the doggies couldn't even smell them. You know, like when you put a piece of chicken in the microwave on a paper plate, the meat gets cooked, but the paper doesn't because of the microwave technology.
Oh,
and so that would that's
interesting.
Story really, you know, hit home with me because things burn differently, and that is how. You know, this directed energy weapon, if you put even a shred of tin, you know, tin put in a, you know, like a, what, a Hershey's Kiss in the microwave, it'll explode, right? Because it's a different kind of energy. And that's why steel buildings were able to fall and disintegrate.
Turn to dust. Yeah.
Turn to dustify in front of our very eyes. We watched it, and everybody wants to focus on the planes. You know, I'm not trying to take away from the victims, but like I said, the best thing that I can do to honor the victims is to have people what is going on and what kind of energy they're stealing from us. They're taking that they know about that they won't give to us, because the same energy that took down this all of these, you know, both of these buildings, actually more of them, all of the World Trade Center name buildings have all been demolished because they're rotting from the inside. Like when you look at the center of buildings they tried to save, it looks like it's been on the bottom of the ocean floor. How is that? It's because we're still seeing the effects now of this weapon that they displayed, that, you know, they demonstrated. They took down these buildings. And back to the firefighters, that is why they're alive. That is why they were able to see sunlight the next day, you know, when they're supposedly buried on 210 stories worth of rubble. Where did the tower go? It turned to dust. That's where it went.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy smoke.
I sent you a couple pictures of those. I don't know if they went through. But there's people are posting amazing pictures of just dust. These
dust
buildings
everywhere.
Are clouds of dust, and it just
and I
got to
shout out Dr. Judy Wood, because she's the one. She actually wrote the book. She's a engineer. She's actually got a lot of letters behind her name. But she has, to my knowledge, is the only person whose scale study happened. And the name of her book is called Where Did the Towers Go? And she describes so scientifically why the stories couldn't have been, couldn't be real. Like, for instance, one of the things is that all of Lower Manhattan would have been underwater if 210 stories worth of buildings would have slammed to the ground. Because Manhattan was already populated by the time they put in the World Trade Center compound, basically, set of buildings, right? They had to build into the Hudson done to get this project done. And there was only a very thin wall between Hudson River and all of Lower Manhattan, and that was the World Trade Center. So if that would have happened and 210 stories would have crumbled in its, you know, on itself, in its foundation, it would have broken that dike and all of Lower Manhattan would have been flooded. So if that, you know, according to physics, you can't do that. and that was intact. So since there were only probably about, you know, six stories worth of building left out of 210, the next day these firefighters were able to, they were there at the end, probably after the machine had been turned off, the weapon had been, you know, they weren't cooked alive because they arrived on the scene after it happened. Buildings fell on top of them, and I'm not saying they didn't have a lot of damage to themselves, but they survived it. They were able to see light coming through next day. They have their radios on, and they're telling their location as to where they are in the building, and they had no idea how to even landmark it because the buildings were gone. It was just two empty football fields. They were vapor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
yeah.
Are you ready for some Pedogate?
Yeah, let's turn to a brighter subject.
Which is,
the actual opposite of what we're talking about, because to question the narrative of 9/11 was to disrespect everyone who died that day. That's what most people's opinion is. And then to flip it over to Pedogate, to question that this is happening is also, it
awesome.
Does the exact opposite. It doesn't honor anyone. It only protects the perpetrators, which is ironic.
Yes.
So yeah, I think
it's sorry. So I'll never forget during the 2020 election cycle. It was about a month before the election, and Donald Trump went on NBC with Stephanie Ruhle, Ruhle.
Yeah.
And she threw it, was questioning him about QAnon. First of all, let's start here. There is no such thing as QAnon. There is Q and there are Anons. But she was questioning Trump, and this actually happened a couple of times, like 2019, 2020, about them trying to brand people who believe in Q and or Anons as conspiracy theorists. So here we go, tinfoil hat stuff. And she kept throwing the question at him and pounding him and demanding an answer about that QAnon believes that there is a satanic cult that eats babies, kills babies, running the world. And which is not exactly true, although we do believe that much of the cover-up, to your point, Elizabeth, has to do with them, which is very, very, very typical. Oh, here we go. Of course, the dog's going to bark because I'm speaking. Has to do with pedophilia. The main goal of a person who commits the act of pedophilia is to keep the secret. And so when Stephanie Ruhle, I wish they have clips of her, she turned into a demon when she was asking him those questions. And what he kept saying was, but that's a good thing, right? Uncovering pedophiles harming children, that's a good thing, right? Why would that be a bad thing? And he just kept throwing the question back at her that uncovering, if there are high-level people committing pedophilia in high-level government positions, we would want to expose that, wouldn't we? That, of course, that wasn't an acceptable answer for Stephanie Ruhle. She lost her cool that night. So
she turned
I'm
into
gonna
a
take
lizard.
Us back to, she turned into a lizard. You watched the demon try to pop itself out or actually contain itself right on live television. It was astonishing, to say the least.
Do you have I want a clip. I missed it. I need a clip of that. Because
I will
otherwise,
get you that.
Otherwise, you sound like crazy people.
Wait
till you see the clip, because she kept trying to get him to say or to denounce
quote-unquote QAnon, and he kept saying, but if they're getting rid of pedophiles, or, you know, if their goal is to get rid of pedophiles in the government or in high-level positions, that's a good thing, right? And she just, you watch the face change, and it was pretty intense. Yes, so we'll get you the clip.
What was her name? What's her name again?
But Ruhle, R-U-H-L-E, Stephanie, first name, and the interview happened in 2020.
She's a good, a very well-known anchor. The same type of, I saw the same questioning from Savannah Guthrie when he was sitting on that
stool.
Maybe,
that's who it is. Savannah Guthrie.
He was amazingly cool, calm. He goes, would that be a bad thing, Savannah?
It was Savannah Guthrie. I'm so sorry.
She was flabbergasted.
Yep.
I saw that, but I didn't see the outlet.
You didn't see the demon? They slowed it down.
I saw her
it was manipulated
not able to be intelligent, because it certainly wasn't the
response
that she wanted.
Okay.
And I thought it was like he was too cool, the king of cool with that.
So
and that made that to us.
My doubting of the government and official government stories projected by the media actually started in 2016. And we watched them try to shove and push and pull and scream Hillary Clinton into the presidency, even though three-quarters of the country hated her. And they tried to make Donald Trump a caricature of himself. But right before the election, probably in started happening in July of 2016, and it actually really started bubbling up during the Democrat convention, and more information was coming out. They were doing something called wiki drops, WikiLeaks. And these leaks were coming from a man named Julian Assange. He insists that it was not a state actor, state party, that provided him the information that he was dropping. And we can, you know, take it right back to our buddy Seth Rich, although Julian Assange never said that's where he got it from. There are millions and millions of people that believe that it was Seth Rich that gave Julian Assange the information to take down the Democratic Party. Emails destroyed any faith that we had in the media, any faith that we had in democratic norms, any faith that we had in the Democrat Party, if we had any at all to begin with, and certainly it ruined Hillary Clinton's chances of ever becoming the president, thank God. Part of those emails, though, were so shocking that I believe they are the reason why Donald Trump was elected, and those had to do with the Podesta emails talking about, and in code, lots of code words, molesting children and stealing children and having children delivered to various places across the country to powerful people to hurt them and molest them, and I would imagine eventually kill them. So they called them Pizzagate. They called this conspiracy theory Pizzagate because, this is a long-known fact, which is establishing the fact that pizza has been known as pedophile code word, as a pedophile code word used by predators to operate hidden in plain sight for many years, in other words, on social media. In October of 2016, when the Podesta emails were released, the Urban Dictionary actually had defined cheese pizza as child porn. And so it's long been known that when people start talking about pizza on the internet, they're talking about molesting children. At the time, there were two definitions of pizza as a code word for child porn, one from 2010 and one from 2015. So it's important to note that these definitions were established long before the Podesta emails were released. This is coming directly from Liz Cronkin, who, by the way, if you ever want to God forbid, go down the Pizzagate rabbit hole. She's one that you definitely need to research her material. And that's where the, and I want to, you know, make sure that she gets credit for these, for the information that I'm providing. Interestingly enough, shortly after the release of the Podesta emails, which were littered with the word pizza in a context that did not make any sense for the word to be used as food or even a code word for some other nefarious activity such as illegal drugs, the Urban Dictionary scrubbed those definitions. As someone who researched Pizzagate immediately after the Podesta emails release, I saw the alternative definitions of cheese pizza as child porn on the Urban Dictionary site with my very own eyes. Then they scrubbed it in 2016. So who would have scrubbed them? The fact that these items were scrubbed should go to show you what great lengths the cabal, a lot of people call these deep state, and I would, you know, pose to, you know, in spite of Savannah Guthrie, that our government is riddled with high-level pedophiles. And this is the way that they keep each other in check. It's the way they hold each other's feet to the fire. If you don't do this, it will be revealed that you have been, you know, having sex with children, hurting children, killing children.
Brownstoning.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Are you going to get to that as one of the other ones or no?
I think it's in here.
Okay.
Yes, brownstoning is another word that was scrubbed from the Urban Dictionary, because the brownstoning has to do with Adam Schiff and all the crap that was going on at the what was the name of the street hotel?
Oh,
Danielle.
The
Standard Hotel. And that there was an inference that they would throw people off of roofs or little, in order to say it was a suicide so that they would keep their mouth shut. So the criminal complaint posted on the Department of Justice website, it read, in May 2017, a law enforcement officer working in an undercover capacity responded to a Craigslist post advertisement placed by Salamac entitled Woman Moms That Are Into Cheese Pizza, which sought to connect with mothers who were into perverted topics. The report continued, in or about July 2017, law enforcement officers executed a lawfully obtained search warrant with Salmac Gmail account and communicated with several individuals regarding an interest in pedophilia and child pornography. So for sure, that's the code that they used, okay? And they have done, the cabal has done everything they can to make this a tinfoil hat crazy conspiracy theory because they want to cover it up. So back to Elizabeth's point, why would they not want to expose it? Because they're involved with it themselves. So there's plenty of evidence that pizza, which is throughout the Podesta emails, and eating pizza and moving children to a place so that people can rape them. So that's where she starts. She wants to make sure that you understand that even though they've done everything they possibly could to try to distract us from the fact that his emails were riddled with those references, that it really doesn't mean what it's always meant. Okay? Now, pedophiles do advertise that they're pedophiles, okay? So that's the next premise of her article. In fact, they actually often brazenly flaunt and brag about their criminal sexual perversion to children. So there's a man named Pumpkin Fright, Dr. Pizza, okay? He says, yes, apparently pizza is now the international symbol of pedophilia because pedos like to advertise that they're pedos. It is true. They do that. Child sex offenders have been throwing their crimes against kids in our faces for ages. They think the public is too stupid to catch on to their underground networks and secret language, so they arrogantly gaslight and mock anyone who dares to call them out. Pizza is just one example of a word that's used as code by pedophiles. There's a whole language of code words and symbolism that predators dish out constantly. You will find in lots of retail articles pedophilia symbols all over the internet, okay, and it's a way to attract children, and B, to so that they can, it's like a secret handshake between them, so they can share the images that they film. Okay.
So if I walk into a pizza place, it's probably because, you know, I want to buy pizza, and I'm not going to assume that every pizza place is selling children, right? But if I walk into the pizza place and there are swirls in the windows and butterflies hanging from the ceilings and a checkered floorboard, and they sell Good Humor ice cream that has, you know, a heart within a heart as their logo, I might start asking some questions. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
And they have to tell us, and then I'm done.
Yeah, right. And I'm certainly never taking my children there. Okay. So the next premise of her article is the way this all started in our family. Okay. So I'm just going to give a little bit of history. When I first came home and got sober and started doing, you know, living life the way you're supposed to, I started going to college to become a drug and alcohol counselor. And I was shocked to find the statistics for trauma among the women that I was serving. It was about 65%. And what I found was that many of them had been molested as children, and that is the reason why they started using drugs and alcohol, because they were using it as painkillers. At the time, I was married to my sweetheart, and he was a heterosexual male to his very core. And I started talking to him about some of the stuff that I was learning, and he looked at me and said, that doesn't happen. People don't have sex with children. That's disgusting. He was disgusted because he was a heterosexual male, and he couldn't conceive of anyone ever being attracted to a child. At the same time, Danielle came home with me, and we, you know, we're having multiple discussions about, you know, being safe, being careful. There's predators out there in the world. And as a matter of fact, it got to a point where my entire family said, you believe all people are pedophiles. And I was sad to say, yes, I do. It was about that time that my grandchildren started being born, and I got even more frantic. Liz Cronkin's next premise says, when I first started Pizzagate in 2016, naysayers often said to me that they refuse to believe it's true because no one would ever do that to a child. In order to understand how these unimaginable crimes against children could be real, you have to accept that these people are not like you and I. In fact, they're the opposite of anyone who has their soul intact and is able to feel empathy for another. So I decided to explore it myself and research it myself and find out who these people are and what makes them tick in order to, first of all, convince my husband that they exist. And I talked to a professor.
And you should always know your enemy.
You should always know your enemy. Absolutely. But also, it was really a way of protecting my grandchildren. So at its core. Who worked with sexually violent predators at Patton State Mental Hospital in California. It's where they house they call them SVPs, sexually violent predators. And she was interviewing him and asking him about his crime. And he was pretty blithely, she said, you understand that this was a six-year-old little girl and you know, you had sex with her. And he said, well, yes, she wore a tutu and she danced for me. So in their mind, they believe that children are attracted to them and want to have sex with them, which is just about as sick as it gets. But that's the people that we're dealing with. Yes. And when I told my husband that, he almost fell out of his chair. His face got white. I think he wanted to barf. But it was at that point that he started to believe me because he was holding our grandson. And I suppose it became personal for him at that time. So in order to understand, in fact, they're the opposite of anyone who has their soul intact. So a man that could look her right in the eye and say and believe that this child wanted to have sex with him, that's the kind of people we're dealing with. These people are wired the complete opposite way good citizens of the world are wired. So something that would give a good-hearted person joy, such as snuggling a puppy, the antithesis of that, torturing an innocent animal, gives them joy. That's how they are. These people are demonic. They are not human, not by our standards. So let's move on to John Podesta. In 2007, WikiLeaks released an FBI internal memo that was circulated to the rank and file in the Bureau, and this is in 2007, identifying known pedophile symbols used by predators. And there's the swirl that Danielle's talking about. There's the triangle that is a swirl, okay? People wearing rings, people having tattoos on them, okay? There's the
heart inside a heart.
Hearts, butterflies, yeah, butterflies. Their symbolism is what's going to bring them down. If you start looking for these symbols in the places that they habituate, you will find where these people are. And so I'm going to move on. Interestingly enough, in 2016, we have Mayor Bill de Blasio read a book to a group of children in April of 2016 at the Queens Library. The New York Daily News noted the strange choice of book the mayor chose to read. When you make something secret, you make it special, the article stated. Then Mayor de Blasio, whose questionable fundraising act tactics are the center of an ongoing criminal probe, delivered Saturday to a group of children at the Queens Library. If anyone's guessed why the mayor chose to read a particularly creepy pedophile grooming book to children, perhaps he didn't choose the book. However, it should also be pointed out that a year after de Blasio read this book, one of his staffers was arrested for child porn. They're everywhere. So here we go with the pizza.jpg articles, okay? So when you link all these facts together, understanding of the underground meaning of the word pizza, it starts to paint a picture. And so the next article is on Substack. If you choose to follow Liz Cronkin, I think it's a good idea. So here we go. Pizza and the Podesta emails, such as Tony Podesta, who are known child traffickers like Jeffrey Epstein, have art collections depicting pedophilia, torture, and satanic symbolism and rituals. I will extensively cover the Podesta emails in a future column, but I want to go over the art collections of some of these elites. You look at the pictures. That was really what started shocking people in 2016. And again, I believe it's what turned the tide when we began to understand that these people are wicked, they are evil, and that there's no holds on them. If you go to Tony Podesta's home, they had a 2004 article in the Washington Post where they went to Tony Podesta's home and they looked at the art that was hanging on his wall. They took pictures. They thought it was pretty neat. He's got a depicting a gold sculpture of decapitated human positioned the same way the serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer positioned some of his victims. It's prominently featured, right? There's pictures of little kids with no clothes on, distressed children. One painting featured a disheveled little girl in a miniskirt and red shoes. Djurović is known for paintings that depict child victims of torture and sexual abuse. All throughout his house are pictures of little kids in distressed, laying in a marsh, clothes on, hanging from their arms, in a bathroom with no clothes on. There's wax statues of the inside of people's bodies with body parts dismembered all over this man's home. And so that's when next they started going after Prince Andrew, looking into him. He has pictures of him with teddy bears all over his bed. Very, very strange behavior. So as we started looking into this, the artwork and the things that they value, all of it is about child sexual molestation and pedophilia. So there's more. I don't think I don't have any more today, but that's what I have so far, that Pizzagate stuff throughout all of the Podesta emails was talking about trading, moving, delivering pizza and hot dogs to people that were on his email list. And again, I believe the Podesta emails changed the 2016 election. Questions about any of that information?
Yeah. Now back to the brownstone, because as you were talking about that, you mentioned A&M Schiff. I'm like, oh my God, that little weasel was there. Do you remember when that original story came bubbling up in the news, and they tried
to
come up with? Oh, I do, because Barney Frank, he became famous out of that. And he became famous because
it was Barney Frank, wasn't it?
He was there, mm-hmm. Yes. And they turned the whole story away from anything that was too distasteful, because there was much of that going on if A&M Schiff was there. And Barney Frank was busted out of the closet, and he wore it like a badge of honor, and everyone applauded him.
Eventually, yes, he did.
And that's kind of how that story kind of went away. Because, and then there was also alluding to, was Mike Pence there, I'm wondering? Because they were talking about some very strange religious type of guys, and they were like, why would four men be in one house together? Don't they pay these people enough? And they're like, they must all be gay. And then it was like, you know, well, one was really kind of weird, and I'm thinking it might have been Pence, his little strict little religious ways he had. And that's, but yeah, they totally bypassed anything under.
Yes, it was about gay sex as opposed to, it was about gay sex as opposed to underage. Yes.
Yeah, and underage. And they never went like, how underage? But then it was kind of like homosexual acts were going on, and then out comes Barney Frank. And then the story went away. And, you know, Barney Frank is the hero because, you know, he's the first. He was.
Because he came out, yes.
Brave enough to own it and come out and stay in office. And then that story went away.
So
but
I made a mistake, though, you guys. Because
so you do remember.
I got excited. Yeah, I got excited. And there the reason why all of this got brushed under the rug, thank you for reminding me, the Pizzagate stuff, was because there was a restaurant in Washington, D.C. called Comet Pizza. And apparently this was one of the places that people who were coming after, getting excited or, you know, trying to research this issue of pizza, that there was a restaurant called Comet Pizza, and supposedly a QAnon supporter went into the restaurant with a gun. What was it? James DeFantis? What was his name, Danielle?
Alefante.
The owner of James Alefante, who was way far up in the, you know, as far as donors is concerned to the Democrat Party. And supposedly a QAnon supporter went into James Alefante's restaurant with a gun and shot the gun. But apparently the gun went directly into James Alefante's computer, into the hard drive, destroying the hard drive. And the news media went crazy, went insane, saying Donald Trump is causing cuckoo people to go in and shoot citizens using this kind of dangerous rhetoric about Podesta and Clinton and Huma, because of course we're all remembering what happened in Haiti and, you know, all over the world. There are many people that believe that they've been trafficking children for years, and because of Donald Trump's dangerous rhetoric, which is back to the same thing that happened with Barney Frank, you know, all of a sudden he's just a gay guy, you know, that, you know, coming out. And but what they do is they flip it around. All these crazy people, and Donald Trump caused him to go crazy and try to kill this guy, believing these crazy conspiracy theories about pedophiles.
in Washington, D.C. And again, it was amazing that the one shot that the guy fired went directly through the floor into the basement where the computer was located and went directly into the hard drive of James Alifantis's computer and wrecked the computer.
Slight correction. He shot into a coat closet. And the story is that he believed was the entrance to the basement. Now, first of all, if he's going in there to save the children, why would he try to shoot him? Was he trying to get? Did he think the bullets were going to hug him?
Right. Yeah. No.
There wasn't. It was a coat closet. And he shot right into the coat closet, which held the server in the coat closet. That was the only thing that was shot was the server. With
I remember
days before
that.
Mom, take it away.
In retrospect, Hillary's server comes to mind. And it just is so convenient that in order, you know, a good liar always points their finger, but he, blah, blah, blah. And they come in.
That's how they do it.
And they come in with, how can we continue Trump rhetoric and demonize any one of these conspiracy theories? And this shows you how little they know. Anons, they are anti-everything. They're not Trump supporters. But they're diggers.
That's what they are. They
dig
for the truth.
They are. But this is all brought to you by your government trying to provide a huge smokescreen so that you don't see what's really going on. That's interesting. I do recall that. Because it never made sense. But, you know, when you have to create an elaborate lie to cover up a horrible, horrible secret to point several fingers in the opposite direction, that was brilliant. But it certainly was a bad, you know, it was almost like, what? None of this makes sense. Your lie makes nothing
go away.
And so immediately they'd have to start crying. Interesting.
Sorry about my chickens, you guys. I apologize.
No worries.
I want you guys to have a wonderful week. Be blessed. I look forward to honoring our buddy next week. I'll have more good news for you guys. Normally, you know, I do the good news, but today I felt it was important to remind people that even though, you know, we mourn the loss of almost 3,000 people, it is quite possible that our very own government did it to us. It's maddening. It's sad. But they keep showing us who they are. And more people are realizing who they really are. And that actually is the good news, isn't it? We're never going to close
sure
our
is.
Eyes again. Yeah. We're never going to. They're not going to fool us anymore. If Donald Trump didn't do anything else, the one thing that he did was show us who the media really are. Finally, after all those years, people are not buying
their
bullshit anymore.
Amen.
All right, you guys
Amen.
Have a great week.
Right. Love you.
Take care. I love you.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Carla. I'm sorry. My daughter's howling like the Baskerville over there. Good Lord. Little reference to...
Sherlock Holmes
with the Baskervilles.
I was watching a set of doodles this last weekend, and it was so hot, right? I mean, we're cooled down just a little bit now, but it was so hot. And these two doodles, they would bark at everything that moved, and one of them screamed like a little girl. That's how he barked, just a little girl scream. And I'm like,
my dog does it. Yeah,
is it a doodle?
No, it's a little cute, beautiful, like it looks like a Cocker Spaniel, but on the line of a Shih Tzu Cocker Spaniel. It's a very expensive dog. It's got papers and everything. I'll have to find out the name. Gorgeous, gorgeous little dog.
Yep.
but like a little black tucker.
Can we call it a TikTok?
Oh God, no, because it's like a she's part of the royal family. It's a very amazing long name, and I can't even butcher it. No, it's nothing like that. but she screams. I'm like, my God, what are you doing? And I'm like, Ernest, stop stepping on your dog. No. That's how she just announces herself that she misses me and please pick me up. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it was like, yeah. And I'm like, holy cow. But the screeching and howling, and I can imagine coming from a big poodle, because that was a big, those are big ones, right? They almost look like air
bottles. He's medium. He's little. He's a doodle, so he's like a poodle and something else. I don't know. I forget what the other one is, but I mean, he's a bougie little dog, and he just screams. Like the first couple times, I'm like, is there a kid fall in the pool? So I've got a pool right out in front of our house. So I'm like, oh my God, did a kid just fall and hurt him? It's that little stupid thing. Okay. Well, with that, our friend Charity Anderson is with us. I know. Do I need to call 911? But our friend Charity is here, so I'm going to let her in.
Let her in, and I'll try to. I'm going to mute while you introduce her because she's going nuts.
Okay.
Welcome, Charity.
Well, hello.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Daniel. Hey.
Well, hello. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you, guys. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the effort very much.
Well, the whole show has really been set up, dedicated to kind of cognitive dissonant events, right? So we first did 9/11 and then Pedogate. And, you know, I think the story you're going to share with us today kind of represents, just a single person's struggle with this same system that is owned by Pedogate. So if you want to just take it away and let us know about your friend's name is Susie, right?
Yeah, Susan. Well, Susie to her friends, Susan to the world. Yeah, her name is Susan Dorothy McPherson. I've known Susie for about 5 years personally. She and I are both from Ohio, and as you know, it's kind of hard to like find a community of people with like-minded thoughts. And Susie and I really hit it off quickly because she's a truth community member, definitely. She was very much into exposing pedophilia that was going on in her community, let alone the world. And that kind of ties into her case that I would like to go into. Do you mind if I just kind of like ramble off some like details about Susie for a minute?
Danielle? Yeah, please do. The floor is yours. Absolutely.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. So Susie is a nurse. She was actually like promoted to being the supervisor for the facility that she worked in. She's extremely caring and giving person, very generous. People that know her know that she's funny, she's witty, she's smart. On a more personal level, she's also a mother of two children. She has a 14-year-old son and an 11-year-old daughter. She is an integral part of her community. And the fact that she is now a victim of this system of being erased and being silenced and being threatened, like literally her life is being threatened, it's a big deal. And so there's been a large amount of effort put in by her friends and supporters to try to save her life, because she's literally in a life and death situation. She's facing life in prison. And when she was arrested, she's only 34 years old now. She was arrested in May of this year, May 27th. And the way her case is being handled has caused like an emergency sort of status for her friends and I. And I feel the most dedicated to trying to give her a voice, because she did reach out to me the night the incident happened. She sent me some like SOS text messages, and I was in Florida with my kids at the time, so there was not much I could do when she was going through the scary situation she was in. And I planned on reaching out to her the next day, but by the time I was able to reach out to her the next day, she was already in jail, and she's been there ever since. Is there any questions you guys want to know? Or I'm not sure exactly how you want to direct this because I know there's a lot of information.
Well, maybe this sounds familiar to me, actually. I'm sure it's been out on Facebook, perhaps. I have some friends who are in Ohio also. You want to divulge what the case is revolving around, what the accusations are, and why she's in prison, what's going on with that?
So Susie was in an 18-year relationship with her children's father. She came forward to her closer friends to disclose that the relationship was abusive. The night she reached out to me, she had sent me pictures of, like, a hole was punched in the drywall and, like, it looked like maybe some broken furniture. I couldn't really tell because it was, like, I wasn't personally there, but that's what it seemed like she was trying to communicate to me. But back in November of 2021, so this was 6 months before she got arrested, she had made, like, a public Facebook comment on how if she did anything to upset her boyfriend that she would be arrested for aggravated arson, pretty much. He would blame her for burning down the house. He said this to her, like, directly, and she made a public comment about it. So she was always kind of afraid to leave him. She was in a situation where she knew she wanted to leave. She had disclosed to us that she, her daughter's arm was broken by her boyfriend. Again, I wasn't there. I didn't personally see it happen, but this is what she disclosed to us. CPS was involved. Nothing was done about it. And then there were, like, very, very obvious signs that more severe abuse was going on and that her boyfriend may or may not have been connected to a network of child abuse events, not just her boyfriend, but potentially other people affiliated with the community. And when she went to the police about it with evidence, they didn't do anything to protect anybody. She was kind of discarded. And she decided to move out in May. When she moved out, she went to stay at her friend Erica's house, and the transition time between moving out and going to Erica's house is when she was texting me that night. She went to the store the next day, like any normal day. She went to the store, and she was arrested at the store, having no idea what happened or why she was being arrested. She later found out she was being charged with 7 attempts of attempted murder and 7 attempts of aggravated arson. And if any of these charges were to be convicted on her, she would be spending the rest of her life in prison. So essentially what her boyfriend threatened to, tell the cops 6 months prior is exactly what happened when she packed up her stuff and left. Her children are now solely being taken care of by the people she's most afraid of them being around. She has no access to her children. She has no way to communicate with them. Her public defender did not interview her, did not question her. It's been over 3 months, and she has still yet to give, like, her side of the story. When she had her hearing 5 minutes before the judge came in, the public defender finally spoke to her and said, we've had a lot of calls to my office that we should question your competency, so we're going to have you tested for competency. She made this decision before even talking to Susie, before questioning her. the competency hearing obviously came back that she was competent. Like I said, she's a nurse, and she was actually a supervisor of the facility she was at. She has not been processed properly like any childbearing age woman going to jail for a long time would have had a pregnancy test at this point. She has not had a pregnancy test. She was never given a drug test. All sorts of like normal things that she should have had access to and treatment she should have been given. She's not been given in over 3 months. She weighed about 130 pounds when she was arrested, and at certain points during her incarceration, she's disclosed that she's lost so much weight that her bones are sticking out, like especially her hip bones, and she's having a hard time sleeping. She was put into some weird sort of solitary confinement for an extended period of time, like 3 days or so. And she was treated really inhumanely while she was on her period. So she's had like all sorts of like human rights issues going on. What else? Her public defender has spoken multiple times, dozens of times seemingly, to her boyfriend, the person who put her into jail. So there's a bias against her, to where she's communicating with the quote-unquote victim, but not with Susie, her client. Her boyfriend has smeared her name. I've done other interviews for her to try to, like, make an awareness about what's going on. He's bragged about being in communication with this public defender. He has bragged about being in communication with all sorts of, like, details about her case where she has no voice, she has no agency. No one in her area seems to be advocating for her. She also has no assets to get a new attorney. Although they were together for 18 years, this guy never married her, so she wasn't entitled to any of the property. The house, the cars, everything that they acquired over that time was put into his name only, so she has, like, nothing to sell. We've been trying to do a fundraiser to help her. We've tried to do, we've did some due diligence and shopped around for an attorney for her, and it's pretty outrageous how much attorneys cost, criminal defense attorneys. Most attorneys were quoting like $25,000 for retainers, plus more as the trial progressed. We did find one attorney in Dayton, Ohio, which seems like a good dude, who agreed to a reachable amount for a retainer. But even then, it's like it's a group effort. Like, she has no family to back her up. She just has her friends. So I'm doing the best I can to make this as public as possible so that she knows people love her, people support her. I've reached out to see if there's, you know, and even in the show, if there's any attorneys that are willing to work pro bono or any agencies that can help us. There's so many problems in her case, like things are not being processed correctly. She just had a forensic report done on the crime scene that proved that she wasn't connected with the crime scene in any way. There was no DNA testing done. There was no fingerprinting done. There was like basic stuff like footprints, like, you know, normal stuff you would think detectives and forensic investigators would look for. On the report, it specifically said to like hold the test. So it's just everything's pointing into a weird direction to where there's nothing about it that makes sense. So that's what's going on in a nutshell.
Wow. What happens at this place?
Okay, so there are three different police reports. So the first police report reports that a gas can was wedged into the window. The second police report mentions that gas was poured on the floor and a cigarette butt was found. And then the third police report reports that the gas was poured all over the house and a lit cigarette was found. So even the police reports are inconsistent. And the third most severe police report was written by a detective that I personally spoke to. Because I spoke to her the night that this happened, I felt the need to reach out to the police and, like, let them know she was in a severe situation and that they should look at her text messages to me to see what type of situation she was in. And at first they were like, well, we didn't see any text messages on her phone to you. And I was like, no, look at them. They're from like 10:30 to like 11:15, like that time period. I have them on my phone. And the detective I spoke with was like, oh, now I see what you're talking about. So even with her cell phone in evidence and even with a witness saying, no, she was in a distressful situation and there's physical evidence of it, they still were like, oh, we don't know what you're talking about. And so this detective I spoke with is in a fraternity of sorts with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend's friend is in a fraternity, and the judge who's overseeing her case is in a fraternity, and they're all brothers together, if that makes sense.
And yep. is her boyfriend connected with these guys?
Yeah, he is. And her boyfriend's dad is like one of the more powerful people within that group.
Wow. So what actually happened? What is her side of the story?
Her side of the story was she confronted him about the pedophilia issue. He blew her off and acted like she was crazy. Things escalated, and she was like, I'm either going to call the cops or I'm going to leave. And he said that she can just pack up her stuff. He gave her some money. She packed up her stuff and stayed with her friend Erica. That's her side of the story. And then there's this, like, gap in time where she just wakes up the next morning, she had stayed the night at her friend's house, went shopping, and was arrested at the store. That's her side of the story. His side of the story is approximately at 3 o'clock in the morning, he woke up to the smell of gas. He walked around the outside of his house with a gun and found a gas can in the window and saw a quote-unquote shadowy figure running around the house. So even with this testimony, there was no, like, eyewitness of her doing anything. At its best, at its very best, there's not even, like, eyewitness documentation that she was doing it. The dad, who was also living in the house, gave testimony that he saw her, but it was like later in the evening. He said that he had seen her and had a confrontation with her, but there was no evidence. Like, there was no evidence whatsoever that she had actually been there. Her clothes, when they tested them, did not have any gasoline smell. The gasoline was poured in a way that it looks like if I were a homeowner trying to frame a crime, I would do the least amount of damage to my house. Do you know what I mean? It was like poured on a puddle on a step outside. Does that make sense? It was like,
yeah,
in the least like harmful, potentially harmful way. That's how the gas was poured. And then when they did the test, the forensic tests, the fire marshal declared there was absolutely no fire damage inside, outside, below, above the house. So in Ohio, the definition of aggravated arson includes, obviously, fire. So there was literally no fire involved. So even at its worst-case scenario, if Susie had poured gas or whatever, there's a charge in Ohio for, like, neglectful intent or, like, I forget exactly the word for it, but it's a misdemeanor, and it doesn't even involve jail time. It's like a ticketable offense for, like, it actually includes, like, pouring gas and creating, like, a potential harm, but not actually creating harm, but the potential for harm. So even at its worst, she should have been charged with a misdemeanor and never even been in jail at any point. But instead of that, which makes sense, She's being charged with 14 first-degree felonies.
Wow. Now, this gentleman that she lived with, did she file charges against him, or did she file a report?
From what I know, she did go to the cops. She did share, like, she actually recorded when she first went into or, like, took pictures. She had taken pictures of going into the cops just to document it. She documented a lot of the things that were happening to her because she felt like it was, like, she needed to, like, make her movements known in case something did happen to her. Like, she needed people to know what she was doing and where she was at. So she did post a lot on social media, and she did post that she was at the sheriff, the place she actually is arrested at right now, she went to for help. And they dismissed it. Like, they acted like it wasn't a big deal. She did put in the effort to pursue charges, but nothing ever came from it. It was the day before she was arrested.
And what did she tell these people? And why would they not accept the report from her?
Part of it includes details about a minor that I'm not comfortable disclosing, and that's why I'm trying to keep it like a gray area because it is a real person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want the whole world to know about the exact details about that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yeah, we want to protect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the child in question is not being protected right now also, which is why it's important for mom to be with her children.
Exactly.
Exactly. Now, who are taking care of her children? Where are they at?
The guy, her boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what she's most terrified about. Her mental and emotional health is obviously freaked out. I'm sorry, what was that?
Where's her family? Does she have family?
She doesn't have family.
No?
She doesn't have family, and that's part of why she's been with this guy for so long. She met this guy when she was 15, and they kind of, like, engulfed her into, like, a Stockholm syndrome, and to put
right.
it lightly.
Well, have you considered going to the school and talk to the school, bypass
yes.
everything and just go and let them
yes,
know what's going
on? CPS has been involved. Yeah. CPS has been involved. And unfortunately, go ahead.
I was going to say request a doctor's examination of all the children to make sure they're okay. That would be the most
mm-hmm.
straightforward. We need to know they're okay. Can you let us know that they're physically okay? Because we suspect this, and let's put our minds at ease. And they're not, legally they cannot ignore a request for something like that, the schools and then DCFS. They need to be put on notice, and they need to report back and be accountable for this accusation.
Yes, and there was a CPS investigation in June, about 2 weeks after her arrest because of all this. And
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, a lot of children, when they're living with the person abusing them, they don't want to betray that person, so they will say whatever they have to not make that person mad at them. Does that make sense?
It does,
mm-hmm.
but a doctor can tell if things are going on, severe things. Have they been examined by a doctor?
That has to be escalated. Do you understand? There's steps to it when there's a CPS investigation.
Mm-hmm. That's what
it's
I
not like,
for.
Oh, there's a report and then doctor exam. It doesn't work that way. There's, like, several steps
mm-hmm.
you have to get to even get that moving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the initial report was, and I read the CPS report. Susie got a copy of it and sent it to me, that she was like, I don't blame them for, you know, lying, but I can understand why they did it, but at the same time, it does scare her a lot because she understands why they are lying to protect
right.
themselves.
That's
so sad.
And as many people know, CPS does not always, and most of the time does not, have the best interest at heart.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the core of what people think they do for a living, it's not really what they do for a living. Some of them are good. I'm not going to say all of them. It's like attorneys, you know. Most of them, you got to question what their real motivation is. So.
Absolutely. Can you tell us the website for Susan's fundraiser?
So we had to look around for like a really good one because a lot of the fundraisers are, they don't let you go for legal funds. This one is called Give, Send, Go. So that's the website, and then the fundraiser, I believe, is I'm going to look it up really quick. We Support Susie, I think, is what it is.
And if you want to send it to me on Messenger, I can share it in the
yep.
chat for this show.
Yep, it's Justice for Susie. Let me send it to you right now, Danielle.
Okay. Okay, got it. I'll post it.
Now, you're close with Susie. Were you close with her children?
No, not particularly. You know, I would take them in a heartbeat. If I had the ability to just, like, foster them until this was all over, I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is right now, it's, you know what I mean? CPS thinks everything's okay, so they're not going to do anything. Susie can't have contact with them. She can't call them. The guy, her boyfriend, has put a lot of money on her commissary. He's gone and tried to visit her several times. He's tried to write her letters. He's not acting like a traditional person whose spouse tried to kill them, you know? But her main concern is trying to make sure her kids are okay. I mean, that's what she usually reaches out about. She missed her kids' birthdays for the first time ever. She's never missed her kids' birthdays. That was kind of a huge deal for her. Things like that.
So this boyfriend, is he keeping the children from seeing her?
So the way a pending case works is that because the children were involved with the situation, they're considered like protected citizens at this point until her case is completed. So the state sees it as they have to protect the kids from any potential harm. And one of the ways they see it as protecting them is to not let them be in contact with her.
Is she being charged as trying to kill them and harm them?
She's being charged with trying to kill and harm every single person that lived in the vicinity of the property. Yes.
Really?
Which she would never, ever do in a million years.
Hmm. Has she gone under any type of psychiatric evaluation? Or
yeah,
to
that was what I was just talking about. She just had a competency hearing by a psychologist. And she was cleared. The forensic evidence does not connect her to the scene at all. The fire marshal report does not connect her to the scene at all. She was arrested with a lighter in her pocket. She's a smoker. She smokes cigarettes. If her intent was to ever hurt anybody by catching anything on fire, she had immediate access to an incendiary device. Do you know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
To me, everything screams frame to get her to shut up, to get her to not say anything, to get control over her, to get control over her kids.
That's sad. And what's the saddest is that our system is designed to keep a child away from the parent, vice versa, and that's just the most insane thing I've ever heard. Except for the fact that she's
being definitely inverted
upon them, you know, she needs to be able to clear herself from that. That's really a shame. Really a shame. Now, go back to, so the children were in the house with him, and
mm-hmm.
she left the kids with him and went to her friend's house.
Yes.
Why would she leave her kids with him and go to her friend's house?
Because he was going to call the cops if she didn't leave.
And sure. I guess my question is, like, don't we have a right to a speedy trial in this country? Like, why is this stretching out so long?
It's been the most ridiculous thing I've ever watched happen. She's had people come in after her who've been processed and released quicker than her for, like, way more serious offenses, like people stabbing people and people, you know what I mean? Like, people who actually set things on fire have already been processed and released before she's even been through anything. I'm only laughing because of how ridiculous it is. Her bail was an outrageous amount
right.
of bail. They denied a 10% option for bail. So a lot of things, like, immediately were like, why is she being treated like this? Why is this happening? Her original charge was vandalism. That was the original charge. And then, like, 6 days later, they charged her with 14 different felonies. With no physical
wow.
forensic evidence, with no fire marshal evidence, with no, I mean, there's literally nothing but testimony.
Wow. This is just, I mean, it's hard to comprehend, and especially since it's somebody that, that the community is close with. But it really isn't that hard to believe, knowing the things that we knew about how this colonial secret works. So, you know, anything I can do to help, for sure, let me know. And I think we're going to try to do the first live stream that I've done in a long time sometime this week so we can get this story out again. And we might have some more news, since I believe she's got some kind of hearing this week.
Correct. So she was given a hearing. She had a hearing last week. But the prosecutor came forward with the forensic evidence and the fire marshal reports. So her public defender asked for a continuance until September 12th, which is tomorrow morning. So, yes, it would be a great follow-up to see how tomorrow goes, because it's her pre-trial hearing. She opted for a trial. She knows that anybody with a brain could see this evidence and be like, there's nothing to connect her besides hearsay. So she's hoping for a trial of, like, 12 competent people, pretty much, because she's
right.
not getting a fair shot. She's not getting a fair shot with the system. She should have a change of venue. She's from a very small town where, I mean, as I've already said, the four of them already are affiliated with each other. So it's like she needs to be in a venue where people are not connected to her boyfriend, where they don't have as much influence over the situation. The most suspicious
yeah.
thing that happened was a week before her arrest. Her boyfriend's friend made a comment asking him if he had enough house insurance because he would be visiting for quote-unquote reasons. And this was exactly 1 week before her arrest. And the guy who made the post, she's known this man, her boyfriend, for 18 years. The guy who made the post, she's never heard of, she's never seen, she's never talked to, she's never heard her boyfriend talk about. So she's like, who's this person who feels comfortable enough to, like, make those comments? So there's just so much pointing in the direction of this is not this is not going to go good for her. And I know hypothetically we like to talk about, oh, this or this or this, but it's like this is a real person.
How long?
This is a real person.
Huh.
What was the question?
I was just thinking, how long had she been content?
She was arrested. How long has she been what?
Content with living with this guy this way, and when did she start trying to leave him, and when did she realize that her kids were in danger and that she was in
danger?
She
started to, well, as a nurse, and I know because my mom was a nurse for 25 years, she worked a lot of hours. She would work 12-hour shifts, and so she wasn't home a lot to see everything happening. When the shutdowns happened in 2020 is when she started to see more because her kids were home more often, and that's when she suspected things were starting to happen the way they went down. And then in 2021 is when she tried. You know what I mean? It's one of those situations where sometimes when you leave, you get murdered, you know? So that's where she was. She was afraid if she left, it would make things worse. So she was trying her best without any other resources and any, like, a very, very small support system to make the move she could without severe consequences for her and her kids. Like, it was severe, her living situation, but it's more severe sometimes when you leave. So she was in that situation in 2021. So this has all been the last, like, year and a half or so she's been trying to make this transition, and this is how it's turned out.
I think the best thing to do would be to paint an overall picture, you know, like this is not something that she's had a history of mental instability and it's been back and forth and police called. And no, it seems like a pretty, on the outside at least, happy family until very recently. I don't know. I just think that picture needs to be told some, and that needs to be painted somehow. But the judge needs to know the full story. Actually, a new judge needs to be appointed.
Yeah.
But
the reason they questioned her competency, was because she did have a previous drug addiction problem. She used to be addicted to ADHD medication, Ritalin, I think is what it was. So her boyfriend had tried to use that against her and had disclosed that to her attorney, and her attorney's like, well, that's grounds to question her competency if she's had a drug addiction. But that had almost nothing to do, you know what I mean? He's even tried to use that against her.
Wow. Well,
now,
I mean,
question.
So
Are these his kids? Are these his kids?
Yes, these are his kids, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, they'd probably be in the foster system if not.
Yes, they would be, yeah.
Man, this has got to be the most depressing show we have ever done, I have to tell you.
It is. But, I mean, if the system, the foster system, worked the way it should, and, you know, consistency is a must, generally speaking, the children are removed because of accusations. Until the accusations are cleared, they're put in foster home, regardless.
I've been a public educator for a long time, and I've had cold, hard evidence that some of my students were being abused in all sorts of ways, and I've, as a mandated reporter, I've made reports, I follow through, and even my students, as a mandated reporter, with firsthand evidence, those kids were never removed. Never. So I've seen it happen over and over again. I know firsthand that CPS does not work the way people think it works ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very well aware of how those things happen and how schools are supposed to report and all those things. I've done it personally myself dozens of times. And there was a CPS report, and it went down exactly how it normally goes down. If children see the abuser as, you know, their life connection, their support system, and they don't want to, you know, gamble more abuse or more problems or potential life-death situations. They just do whatever they're told. And it happens. It happens 9 times out of 10 for survival. It's a survival mechanism.
Even students are smart.
Even if they can be smart, they can be good kids. They can be honor roll students. They could still be, you know, still be in life or death situations, and people have no idea. I've had students who were brilliant that were top of the class, but they were perfectionists and they were overachievers because they didn't want to upset the parent at home. You know, that was the motivating fact. People assume all these good kids don't have problems. No, they do too. And it's not always the kids that come in with behavior problems or emotional problems. Sometimes they take things out in private.
Yeah. Yeah, we've actually been talking a lot today about trauma-based mind control. And
yep.
It's definitely
that's exactly
right,
what's going on.
You know, yeah, and that's exactly what went on with 9/11. That's what goes on with Pedogate.
Yep.
And that's what goes on with situations like this. It's all connected, and that's how they keep us not questioning the system or at least doing anything about the system en masse.
Or at least giving the picture that things are being done. It's a cathartic experience, like, oh, this one thing got taken care of, so we're going to not look at those other 99 problems that we have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of give a smokescreen experience of, you know, to appease the masses, this one thing got taken care of, but really it's a lot deeper.
Yeah. I'm just seeing coming through on the Facebook that Annie Liberty died as well as Hunter Lee.
Oh, wow.
I saw that. Now, I don't know who Annie was, and that, and it's just horrible. I went to her page. She looked nice, and it's just sad. Very, very sad.
Did you know either? Did you know Annie or Hunter, Charity?
Hunter was one of Ty's friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew him through him. But no, I didn't know about Annie, really, but it's just sad to hear somebody else died. It's like, wow, I already knew that you guys were going to be dedicating a show, but.
This is, yeah, he's been on this show before, Hunter
mm-hmm.
has, and he was a personal friend. I'm not claiming that he was anywhere near as close to me as he was with Ty. Ty's a mess, but, you know, we did chat
yeah.
fairly often on the phone, and I don't really talk to many people on the phone, so. You three, I've talked to you on the phone, you know, beyond the show, and so consider yourself fortunate. I don't talk to him. I text. I'm a text person, but I talk to him fairly often, and I'm going to miss him. That's really sad. And now I'm finding out that this is definitely a questionable circumstance death. Are you guys friends with Lolly Whitehead?
Yeah.
Sending me screenshots of Hunter posting, live streaming in the middle of the night about a week ago. She goes, a couple of us in the comments section trying to get him to talk to us. I grabbed a screenshot and was going to send this to you and Ty, but the video is pulled. Just walking on a live stream on an overnight or on an over on a highway overpass.
Really?
And that's the last time I've heard of.
Super weird.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is just developing, and Ty couldn't even talk about how he died, and I think he knows how
he died. He was devastated. It broke my heart. Broke my heart twice.
And he didn't say in the video. I watched it, right, but it was very soft. He didn't say how he died, right?
He couldn't get into it. I'm sure that we'll learn more about that as time goes on. It's just
my first thought was that he was taking down, like, he was trying to take down an adrenochrome pedophile ring. We talked about it at at great length.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's dead. And then there's another one that I still can't bring my heart to research, but nobody's heard from him for years, is John Michael. He was a good friend, came and stayed at my house, and he started looking into pedophile rings, and I have not heard or seen anything from him in years. And I can't even think about how to contact him. But that's what happens when you try to expose these things to some people. And it's definitely evil that we're up against.
It is. It is. And you really, we need to pray and just stay close with our families, I really think, because it's dangerous out there. It really is. You know, it breaks my heart that you weren't closer with the children to be able to, you know, get some type of a read as to whether they're okay or not. Situations like that when they don't let people in, it's hard to be of any help at all.
Well, she and I, we live about 3 hours away from each other. We're both in Ohio, but it's not like we're next door neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I would be able to talk to them anyway is through him, and that's a no-go for me. He did directly, the last time I did a show and I exposed some of the things I've talked about tonight, he sent me a direct message, which was extremely, I mean, the point of it was to intimidate me. So that would be no anyway for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's sad. And it's like, you know, those are his kids. It's not like it's just the boyfriend. Those are his kids. And it's kind of like, you know, lines are crossed, lines are drawn. It's a very difficult situation. I also had my dealings with the child welfare services, because I do the same thing you do, and unfortunately I was able to help, but when you can't help, when the system is broken, and our kid that tried to help went from bad foster homes into a damn psych hospital, and it's where she ended up. And I don't know if you, in the news, that's our big thing, is we're putting our foster kids into psych hospitals because we don't have enough foster homes, they say. Well, it's the ones that are hard to place, and she certainly was a special case and needed TLC, and it broke my heart, you know, because I thought, oh, my God, she would have been better off in this semi-horrible home where they were mean to her than to be in a fucking hospital drugged and lost. Nobody can get to her. Nobody knows where she's at. And just the fact that that's where she is, I was devastated, absolutely devastated, because we are just dealing with a horrible, evil system that need not even exist. We need to try to reclaim our family units and our support systems and not let people get involved when they don't need to be. It's just, it's heartbreaking. It really is. And it gets to be too much. And we had, this could not be the more depressing show that we have done ever. Let's not do another one like this.
Oh, man.
Honestly.
Totally.
You know?
I'm worried next week. I'm dedicated to doing next week's show on Hunter, and that one might not be any better from the early report.
Well, I think it would honor his memory to replay, because I remember his conversation was fantastic. And I don't think that we should go in the opposite direction of letting them win and hide and be scared of them. No, I think they need to be, you know, the lightness will expose the darkness. And dark cannot hide in the light, or it cannot live. It has to hide itself. It cannot thrive in light. So, no, they're not going to win. We're not going to be afraid, because, you know, just you can get rid of me and there's going to be 10 other people behind me. They'll take my place. And that's how we continue to win this fight. That's my feelings on this.
Yeah, And that reminds me of another mutual friend that passed away, which was Holly Dyke, who died this summer. Like, her passing actually emboldened me more so. I had never done a live video or a live anything. But her passing was, like, fuel to my fire. Like, she was never afraid to make her voice heard. And what's that?
We did a show on her when she died.
Yeah, we did.
I'm just saying, when you say, you know, if I were to leave, 10 people would come after, it's like, that's true. It's like sometimes when you lose, like, one of those warriors, it's like, you know, you have to step up and, like, replace that energy that's missing now. So I feel like
Absolutely.
Her passing actually made me come forward and talk about, I mean, it's not easy for me to talk about these things. Obviously, it's nobody really wants to talk about any of this stuff, but sometimes you have to, and you have to, like, dig deep into, you know, the well of energy that you're given to kind of bring light to situations. So I think her passing kind of pushed me forward a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about, can we talk about something, like, uplifting for the next few? Do you garden, Charity? You garden, don't you?
Heck yeah, I garden, and I have chickens.
Yeah, that's right. That's
cool.
Like, that's, we have to, I think, maybe creation versus tragedy. My mom actually
I
lost
have funny
four
thing
chickens happen. This week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's sad, but that's we're gonna save that for a sad show. So,
so since you guys both have chickens, I've been looking through things, and I get this the old fashioned way of doing things, and they have the pickling. No, it's not pickling eggs; it's the storing eggs without washing them in lime water. Have you guys tried
that? Yeah, preserving them. Yeah, water glassing them or using the. The lime.
Yeah. Have you done that?
Pickling lime. Oh, yeah.
So they last that long and they come out really great? Just crack them and they're good?
Yep. So far, I mean, there's ways to test them. So there's like a 90-some percent. So you always get like 1 out of 20 that doesn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just simply put it into like a bowl of like cool water, and if it goes to the bottom, it's good, and if it floats to the top, you toss it out. That's the old school method of testing for a rotten egg.
Cool. That's good.
Yeah,
know.
If the sealant isn't made around the egg completely with the water glassing or with the lye, it will the yolk and the contents will start to dehydrate, and the shell will like fill up with more water over time, and that's what makes it float to the top. So that's how you know, because the bacteria have been eating the contents inside. So
mm-hmm.
easy way to avoid cracking open a rotten egg.
Mhm. That's good to know. You know, it's always terrible to have to go through all the work of doing something like that, and then it's all yucky. So that's right. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's something to do. How many chickens do you have?
So I have 12 chickens, and I was going to tell a funny story. So this whole time I thought I had one rooster and 11 hens. And they produce like crazy. I thought shy female chicks that I got in April for my 6 hens. But we just found out today one of our hens is actually a rooster, and we found out the hard way. So it started growing. I was like, what in the world? I thought you were a girl this whole time. So I technically now have two roosters.
Are you sure?
And
I've had hens,
hens.
I've had hens crow.
This one was crowing. It was crowing and trying to copulate at the same time. So I'm assuming it's a boy. And they just started laying eggs like a couple weeks ago. So it's like, this is kind of like, you know, they're done with puberty stage. So this would be the time if it were a rooster to start, you know, acting like a rooster, because the hens are starting to lay eggs too. So
mm-hmm.
That was fun. My daughter's in first grade, and she actually was like, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. It's like, oh my God, yes, don't look.
It's funny.
Yeah.
I saw my squirrels in the backyard. They were playing squirrel games like that, and I was so proud of them because I feed them all the time, and they're just little, big, huge little monsters. But they were playing piggyback, and I'm like, oh, look at you guys.
Aw. And look, they're wrestling.
Yeah. I thought it was cute. Apparently there isn't just one time of year to mate, but they were having a cute little time in the backyard. My God, we have so many foxes and coyotes in this town. People are scared to death on our what's happening and blah, blah land. And I'm just like, wow, we've got a real healthy ecosystem going here in the far suburbs of Chicago. I was very proud to see that. So life wins. No matter how badly we want to try to fuck it up, life goes on.
Oh, yeah. Life finds a way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the day of the quote-unquote hurricane on Friday.
I saw that. I was like 160. I was worried you were going to lose power and I'll die.
No, we didn't lose power, but the latch to the chicken coop didn't latch. And the chickens went in and ate all of our garden, and then Nala ate 4 chickens and brought them in the house like souvenirs.
Oh.
So our chickens died and our vegetable garden died.
Oh, my God.
It was a tornado.
Oh, that's a circle of life, I guess.
Yeah, a tornado was a circle of life.
But it was the weakest hurricane ever, I got to say. It rained for maybe a couple hours, but like off and on, mostly sprinkles. No wind here. Then stopped at like 3 o'clock and never started up again. It was just from like the morning to 3 o'clock.
Jeez.
Well, that's good.
Disappointing.
Did your mom's chickens make it through, or you lost everybody?
Well, they survived the hurricane. They didn't survive Hurricane Nala, though. She ate 4 chickens that day.
Your dog ate 4 chickens?
Yeah, Nala, the one that was barking in the background. Yeah. She ate 4 chickens. And the chickens ate the garden before that. greeted my mom at the door coming home from work with a chicken in her mouth.
Let's
round out the show. Let's get all of the negative energy out. You know, it'll be the most depressing show ever.
Poor
the
baby.
Farm dog ate the chicken. After the chicken, ate the garden.
So
this is not even a good guard dog.
Oh, my God. Well, I tell you what, my dog, when I was a kid, ate my Cherokee and came out with him in his mouth, and that devastated me. I love them both, but I'd like
anybody else, any other dead pets you want to talk about? Let's just, like, get this. Yeah, we've got 15 minutes. Let's just.
My chickens are kind of like the opposite. I mean, they will kill any other animal that comes in their territory. So for me, I'm just like, be careful of my chickens, actually. They're kind of like.
If an Amazon worker came and tried to leave a package, would they write "can't deliver, scared of chickens"?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I give them like kind of free range in my backyard, so they don't ever encounter the Amazon worker. But yeah, I mean, if there's like a stray cat or something that's wandering around, they will go after that cat. Like I have no fear that my chickens take care of themselves. So the cats are afraid of my chickens.
Cat
I don't know.
In the backyard. We thought the bobcat was the worst part of it, but.
Yeah.
Apparently not. It was not. Actually,
and
you know what? Actually,
it
was even. The bobcat has eaten 4 chickens, and now Nala has eaten 4 chickens.
Wow. How big is your brood of chickens? How many more chickens do you have left over, I guess?
Technical answer is as many chickens as the city of Carlsbad allows, but I think we are at like 36.
Right.
Yeah. I feel you on that. Yeah. Wow.
But you let yours free range? Because, like, okay, here's the thing is that, you know, on top of losing livestock, now we're, like, seeds doubled in price. So, you know, the farm was spending $200 a month on feed, and now we're spending, like, $400 a month on feed. Do you use feed or no? Yeah.
I supplement with it. I think that's partly why I like to let them run around. I got lucky. I live in town, but I have like a half acre yard. So
nice.
I let them have like a quarter acre of grass, and that's like their primary, like, you know, thing that they like to eat anyway, plus they eat bugs or whatever else they can come across. So I do like give them feed, but it's not primarily what they depend on, I guess. They really like to go, like, they'll dig themselves into the dirt and make their own nests, and, you know, whatever they dig up is what they eat for breakfast sometimes. And
yeah,
they still have like coops and little houses to go into if they want to, but I mean, generally speaking, like, my backyard's pretty well fenced in. They're not going anywhere, so I've had them for a year and
ours
a half is, now. So
oh yeah, ours is really fenced in too, but we have a lot of hawks and bobcats, but, you know, the bobcats aren't there, you know, during the day. But
mm-hmm.
what we're thinking about doing is, honestly, it's like we need to get the coop away from the house. It's kind of right by the house, and we have about a quarter of an acre of a hillside. And what we're really trying to do is move the whole coop down to the second level. We've got about four levels of usable space. We've got a lot of fruit trees, but just letting and garden beds, but just letting the chickens roam out from the second level and keep some kind of, like, I don't know, like, enclosure down where, you know, where the chickens can get from one level to another and not
mm-hmm.
have hawks come and eat them during the day. That would be ideal because weeds kind of take over the yard.
Yeah. I do have a section where their coops are that's, like, got chicken wire over the top of it for the hawk. So whenever they see a hawk, they know to just run back in, you know. We have chicken hawks, too, but they know. I mean, they keep one eye open toward the sky. So whenever there is a hawk, they all see it and they all run. And there is, like, an enclosed part of the yard that they can run to for safety, but they have access to the yard. They want to come out. But, yeah, we made, like, a little dome shape out of chicken wire.
yeah.
Because it's, like, relatively cheap to do.
We have a greenhouse we're thinking about turning into. We have, like, an old greenhouse, like, just the hoop of a greenhouse. We were thinking about doing with that, you know, like,
yeah,
an enclosure
pretty much
for
that's
them.
Yeah, pretty much that's exactly what we did. I used not quite a greenhouse hoop, but, like, a recycled, repurposed, like, you know, playground set as kind of like a support
nice.
System, but it works. Yeah. It's very minimalistic in price, and my chickens are happy, so everybody's happy.
Yeah, yeah. Now we actually get to level up a little bit because we have a farm license. We're an actual farm, and so we get
mm-hmm.
a huge rebate back every year, and we pay, like, very minimal property taxes because it's, like, grandfathered in. Until they take that
nice.
Away from us in California. That's the only reason we could afford the property that we have in a coastal city. But, you know, we have a farm license. And so, like, we could make that, you know, it already makes us a ton of money, even if we're just talking about the property tax that we save. And we're thinking about getting, like, a little grain silo. Like, I really should do more videos on this little homestead because it could be so much. And it could give people a lot of inspiration on how to do it themselves because it's not much land, but it's extremely efficiently utilized and the water,
mm-hmm.
we've got a drip irrigation system and so we're not wasting a drop of water. And, I don't know, like I feel like that's, right. But that has to be video. You know, there's a lot of things like what's that?
A walk and talk, yeah. I think that'd be great.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of things lost in audio.
It's a huge hot topic either way, Danielle. I totally think a lot of people are getting hit to self-reliance and just how to, like, you know what I mean? If things go any worse, like, how do you survive type of topics? People are really tuning into that lately.
Yeah.
And we've been doing that. The show lately has been focused on 1 hour of food, 1 hour of news, and 1 hour of health. And that's been,
that's great.
We've been doing survival crops that everybody should, you know, the 9 quickest growing crops and things like that in case things go bad or in case things go good and we decide to turn our back on the system and do it ourselves.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's such a sense of woohoo when you do something. I just cut off, you know, the top of a beet because I finally got myself to where I cut up the vegetables that I buy to make me healthy and made a salad. And I started doing this because I'm too lazy. I just take the ends and I'll put them in some water because I got a little thing of water. And there it sat, and within 2 days, I had the beet starts growing. And now I got, like, this little killer houseplant on my on my counter, and it's beets. A bee leaf. And those things are fantastic in salads. And do you know how easy and how quickly you can have just a little herbal garden on your counter for just quick little salads? And look at, they follow me. You follow me. I'm on the where's
the beets and dogs.
The beets and the dogs. Everybody's following me. The dogs are following me. Barking, as I'm trying to get away from them. These brats. Oh, God. But you can have fresh salads. And, you know, not lettuce, but when I have a salad, it's vegetables. And, you know, you could do, well, I think even little romaine, the little end of the romaine will grow like that, too. But you've got your little stuff. Perpetual little salad fest on your counter, depending on how big your kitchen is. Mine's, but I still have room to grow little plants on the counter. But it gave me a kick when I saw that, and I've been, you know, struggling not to take a picture and post it on Facebook because that's earth shattering news people want to see. But it's pretty cool.
I think growing, taking a picture of growing your own salad and taking a picture of your salad at dinner are two different things. You know what I mean? Like,
yes. I agree.
One's a little bit more bragging rights.
But still kind of, considering everything that goes on and what you want people to see, it's kind of like, I will not bore you with a little picture of my beets. But it's the coolest thing in the world is to be able to grow your own food, I think.
Yeah,
so I think,
it's very empowering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I always feel it's like Christmas morning. It's like you get to go out and see what's out there. Like, it's a surprise for me.
Yeah.
Like, for me, we did, if you get, like, food-grade plastic, like, frosting containers from, like, a grocery store or bakery, you can grow your own potatoes over the winter. At least, like, in the Midwest,
yeah,
like, you can't grow anything.
Right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exactly what I did this
that's
year for
true.
The first time, and I was like, oh, Merry Christmas to me. It's like, look at all these potatoes. I didn't know were here. So,
that's
fun.
So cool.
And did you notice how good they taste? How much better they taste?
Anything that's free tastes better, in my opinion.
It's just, it's unbelievable. The taste of real, real food compared to what we're subjected to. And even like this new, there's a new apple out. And I'm like, how could there be new apples? I'm 57. I know all the apples. If it's new, it can't be good. But I was broke, and they were on sale. And I'm like, okay, it looked pretty good. And they were called cosmic ass apples. So I'm like, no, this is the devil's work right here. But I'm broke, so I'm like, and they're very, very good. And I'm like, but I know there was nothing in them. There was no nutrients. It was juicy, but there was no flavor. And they never went bad. I cut it up and it would last forever. And I'm like, this is not right. But because I'm broke, I ate it and it still tasted semi-okay. But I'm like, this is horrible. How many other things are they slipping through to us? And it's just, they're not real. The real ones come from the farm. And this is apple time. apple time is when you go to the apple farms and get your bushel baskets and pick your own stuff. And that the taste is just fantastic.
And
no
you
matter
deserve
fact,
them.
Maybe,
yeah, my kids and I did that yesterday.
Good for you. Good for you. My neighbors.
It's still a little bit too early here. Ours is October, November, because October is really like the hottest month here. It's like October and November, and we go up to a place called Julian and pick apples. It's not too far. That's like one really good thing about San Diego, California, really, but San Diego has almost all of the seasons. Like you can climates. You know, there's like the
right.
desert,
mm-hmm.
the oceans, the mountains. The,
that's right.
You know,
yeah.
We kind of have it all.
That.
We just
so
nobody
cool.
can govern it with a shit. That's all.
I think you, that's the curse of God. I think that's a biblical thing. We've been cursed.
Well, I think, honestly, that's the reason that California is going to be the first to turn away from the system in a non-hostile way. You know, because there's other places that they know that it has to be done, but, you know, you've got seasons where you literally, like, have to huddle for warmth if you weren't relying on a system. And so in a place like San Diego, Southern California, like, it's getting so bad here that, in the not-too-distant future, we're going to have to turn away from the system. And we're going to be able to survive it. So with that, we just got the 60-second mark
awesome.
Of the most depressing show ever in Seeds of Change history. But that's what needed to be said. All of it needed to be said. So.
Yeah. Next week will be better. And we'll get into the ever-popular, you know, how we lived through this horrible weather. Canning. We canned back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I can today.
It was like break. It was a break time from all the work you used to have to do to live. You
if I ever did
everything
a show on canning, I would call it Can-Can.
Yeah, you had a good marketing strategy. I remember last year, Danielle, when Only Cans, or you said Only Cans, that's what it was last year, when Only Fans shut down.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember that. It was pretty
yeah,
funny.
An Only Fans. For only cans and only pans
only
for
cans.
Cooks for people who like to cook.
Right.
Okay. Well, with that, I love you all. Please consider donating to Susie, to Susan. We love you all, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank
you. God bless. We'll stay some prayers for you. Definitely. Thanks for coming on, and we're praying for you. Have a good week, guys.
Bye.